Luttrell's story is a legend, a living legend, a legend that will live long after lots of other living legends have died. Tonight, we are extremely proud to present the semi-legendary life story of the Pre-Fab Four, Dirk, Nasty, Sig, and Barry, who made the 60s what they are today, the fabulous Luttrell.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I'm your host, Scott White. And what are we looking at this time? We're looking at the Ruttles, All You Need Is Cash, the Eric Idle vehicle. And since this is an English project, I have a very special guest, Braun Edge, all the way from Manchester, England. Braun, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Whether it's technically a British vehicle, because it was co-funded by Lorne Michaels.
It was.
Yeah. Does it matter? I don't know.
It was funded by Lorne Michaels, and it's the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. Because Dan Aykroyd, this is what I call a sneaky Dan Aykroyd project, because he's in the movie. It was a TV movie. He's in it for like 15, 20 seconds. They had Bill Murray and John Belushi and Gilda Radner and Dan Aykroyd. And Dan Aykroyd had the least to do out of all of them.
Yeah.
In this.
Yeah, he just coughs. He doesn't even
know. Right, yes. And isn't he doing an English accent?
I think he might be. He mostly coughs, though. I don't know how you'd cough in an English accent.
Brian Thigh was a top record executive in London in 1962. Mr. Thigh, you've been known for many, many years as the man who turned down the Ruttles.
Yeah, that's right.
You said that guitar groups were on their way out and would never make any money at all in the 60s.
Yes, I did.
You turned your back on all those millions of sales, all those hundreds of gold records.
Yeah, that's right.
What's it like to be such an asshole?
What?
But that's why we're doing this. Braun and I know each other. We are both part of the Comedy Sports Nation. The
Comedy Sports Nation. Internation.
Internation. Braun is actually performed here in the States, and I've actually had the pleasure of going to Manchester and performing there as well. So we've both performed in our respective countries. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. I had another podcast where I had a gentleman who he was from England. He lives here in the States. He has an accent. And I just wanted to ask you this. When you're over here in the States and you talk in your accent, do people answer back in an English accent to you?
I mean, not everyone, but you do get it a lot. It's weird because we have so much American culture over here, like rammed down our throats on TV and stuff. So we're maybe more used to hearing American accents than Americans are used to hearing British accents. So I don't notice so much that happening over here when an American or a Canadian starts talking. No British person tends to go, "Oh, hi, how are you? Oh, my God."
When I was over there, nobody did that to me.
Thank you.
Somebody said once, somebody was like, "Oh, you're a Yank." And that was it. They just didn't care.
We don't care.
You don't care.
But in America, yeah, it does tend to happen a fair bit, like more than I would like it to. You'll be talking to someone and they go, "Oh, are you from England?" Good.
My other friend said, or they would go, "Good day, mate." That's not even the right one. That's not even the right accent.
That's what we used to get, because I lived in Wisconsin for a while, and that was what people assumed I was Australian rather than British. I think my accent's changed a lot since then. It's 20 odd years ago. And I think I had quite a strong sort of northern, I don't know whether I do now, more northern accent, and maybe it sounded more Australian just because they're used to hearing Cockney or what we'd call RP, which is just posh. And they weren't used to hearing me from up north, you see. Weren't used to it.
So we have the Ruttles, mm-hmm. which is a parody of the Beatles.
Yep.
Well, all right, let me ask you this. This is Eric Idle's brainchild. He wrote, starred, and co-directed it. Were you a Monty Python fan growing up?
Yeah, and weirdly, I got into Monty Python when I lived in America because it was on Comedy Central constantly. And it hadn't really been on British TV while I was a child, really. So I hadn't noticed it until I moved to America and then noticed how obsessed America seemed with it, which was quite interesting. I tell you what I have been for a long time, though, is I've been a huge Neil Innes fan and the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. So my link to the Ruttles is more of a Neil Innes link, really. Although I like the Pythons and Eric Idle. But my interest is more in Neil Innes, personally.
I discovered Neil, he wasn't really in the TV series.
No.
But I discovered him when I watched Monty Python at the Hollywood Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he plays with them, but he does that great, ooh, I'm an idiot, yep, on the piano. Ooh, to be an idiot. It's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful piano song. And when the lyrics are, that just sort of blew my mind when I heard that in the middle of a Monty Python show.
So here's the thing about that song, How Sweet to Be an Idiot by Neil Innes. Have you heard much Oasis?
I'm not an Oasis fan. No,
sorry. I'm not really. But the song, I don't even know what the song is. How free to be whatever, whatever that song is. It's basically the same as How Sweet to Be an Idiot. So how sweet to be an idiot.
How sweet to be an idiot, as harmless as a cloud, too small to hide the sun, almost poking fun at the warm but insecure, untidy crowd. How sweet to be an idiot and dip my brain in joy, children laughing at my back with no fear of attack, as much retaliation as a toy. How sweet to be an idiot. How sweet.
Anyway, so Neil Innes took them to court and won.
Yeah, good for Neil.
Yeah, so he is like had to be put on as a co-writer of that Oasis song now, and rest his soul, because obviously Neil Innes died last year, which is very sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he was getting royalties. He's probably living off those royalties for a long time, I think.
Good for him. Yes. Yeah. So this is a mockumentary of the Beatles called The Ruttles. But what really blew my mind is I looked it up. Do you remember the Beatles anthology that came out in mid-90s? It was a miniseries. I don't know. It came out.
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah, I watched it religiously, yeah.
Yes, me too. And when I watched the Ruttles, they really recapture the black and white concert footage.
Oh, yeah, like frame by frame.
Frame by frame. It's fantastic. Yeah. It's like when I saw the Beatles documentary, it was like, that came out in 78, but it looks just like it did in 95. Apparently, George Harrison let Eric Idle see some. They were working on that documentary way back in 78, and it didn't come out until 95. So that just blew my mind.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive how similar they've made that parody footage. And even things that I was watching something recently that I actually didn't know until last week. Watching something about Ringo, where he, in an interview, he talks about he wanted to be a hairdresser, or he wanted to own a hair salon or something. And obviously within the Ruttles, like, that's what Barry Wom says. He said, I want to be a hairdresser, I want to be two hairdressers. And then it's like, so it's like taking that original joke that Ringo made and then making it even a bigger joke within the Ruttles as well.
Well, the big joke in the Ruttles is George Harrison, who was known as the quiet one.
Yeah.
The actor who played George Harrison, who played the George Harrison part in the movie, he didn't speak.
No.
He didn't. I mean, he was singing during the songs, yeah, but he never spoke a word of dialogue. No. And so they took that, the quiet one, to the nth degree, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. No, yeah, I love that about that. I don't know why, it's just made me think. I actually saw, I didn't see the Ruttles. One of my friends did, because they toured late 90s as the Ruttles when they released their second album.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is really good, actually. It's very good.
You brought up Neil. And yes. I just want to say that the music is fantastic.
Oh, I know.
Not only is it an excellent, I don't want to say, you know, a parody of Beatles music, but just the songs themselves are just great. Yeah. That's just all on Neil.
Well, I watched a doc. I don't know. You know how it's been in the pandemic when all you do is watch documentaries all day. I watched a documentary a couple of weeks ago. In fact, I think it was just an interview with Neil Innes, and he was talking about how he wrote the music for the Ruttles. Purposely didn't listen to any Beatles songs because he wanted to just see if he could capture like the essence of each song rather than it be a pastiche or parody of a specific song. And then he took them, because he and George Harrison were friends, he took them to George Harrison and played them to him. So George Harrison could effectively sign them off and say, that's far enough away that you're not going to get sued. I think there was one of them. Oh, I'd have to get this information right.
I think it was Get Up and Go.
Is that what it was? And there was one.
Yeah, the one that, yeah.
Too close.
The one that was too close to the Paul McCartney. Get Back. Yeah, Get Up and Go was, I think that was the one.
And I think he did it. He got into a legal battle about that song. It might have been the whole album, actually. There was something that he had to, oh, I wish I could remember the exact facts. I'm sure it's something like Lennon McCartney is now on the first few of the Ruttles songs, because they were so similar, but the rest of them were fine, something like that. But I know like George Harrison was back in the whole, well, he's in it.
Yes. He's the only Beatle that's in it.
Yeah.
Cause I know him. I know you said Neil Innes was close with George Harrison, and Eric Idle was close with George Harrison.
Yeah.
I remember hearing, I read one of Eric Idle's books, and he said he took George's death worse than he took Graham Chapman's death.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were really close.
Yeah. I can believe that. I think they've had more time together as well over, you know, just statistically.
I enjoy, so the scene, so George Harrison plays an interviewer and he interviews Michael Palin. So I thought, so that's like the Beatles and the Monty Python here in the state. That's like the, you know, the kings of rock and roll and the kings of comedy from England together in one scene. I thought that was very, very nice.
It's one of my favorite scenes as well, because the background business that's going on, it's just so funny.
Yeah.
A bit of unexpected background business.
There have been continued allegations that Ruttle Corp is going bankrupt. Eric Manchester, the Ruttles press agent, are these allegations true?
No. No, they're conjecture, you know. They're sort of rumour. I think you'll find that where you get success, you'll always find this sort of rumour. No.
So the stories of the theft, they're not true also?
No, they're greatly exaggerated, greatly exaggerated. It's bad, you know. Things are going. But nothing like the rate that people indicate. The trouble is that people feel that because these boys are the Ruttles, people can come in and just help themselves to whatever they want. And this is just not on. And we're putting a stop to this, and we are doing. You know, it's almost dried up. Things have gone. I won't deny it. Television sets. The odd car belonging to the company has disappeared. But it's not extreme, you know. Although, I did come in once and found that my office had been nicked.
Mm-hmm.
But it had been nicked by Rondy Klein, who we'd called in to stop this sort of flow of goods from the building, so that was all right.
Mm. So once you see this stopped, do you feel that Ruttle Corp will continue into the future?
Absolutely. I feel that once we've put a stop to this sort of bit of petty pilfering, Ruttle Corp will last for a very, very, very...
We find out that their manager is obviously a, you know, obviously a pedophile, because they keep, but they're all directing it like they're all saying it matter of factly. It was the trousers. What did he like most about the band? It was the trousers.
Oh, well, of course, time, I like the trousers. You know? Yeah. Different time, you know.
Yes, it was a different time, but all that was all that was stated of matter of factly. Oh, and yeah. Then you get your first Bill Murray is playing a American disc jockey, and he's just yelling at the top of his lungs. So that's yeah. just sort of, the divide between English humor and American humor at the time. English was very dry, and American humor was like very over the top, in your face.
That's another scene that is directly just ripped from footage. Because wasn't the DJ called Murray the K? I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. And they just got Bill Murray to play Bill Murray the K.
Yeah.
And the footage of Murray the K is basically exactly the same. It's just Bill Murray's changed the words of the names and that's it. But he might as well just be the same footage. He does such a good job.
Flushing Animals, what do you want to know? What do you want to hear? If you call me up at 555-2160 and say you want to hear anything but the Reynolds, I'm going to come looking for you. I mean it, because it's Reynolds Day. They're going to be here tomorrow talking about their trousers. It's a big, big day here in Flushing. Let's give them a big round of applause. I know I can't hear you, but I know I can pick up what you're saying, baby. The scene is here in Flushing. The whole world's eyes are on Flushing because the Prefab Four are coming to town tomorrow to talk about their trousers.
Well, I don't know about this. Do you know about this?
No.
I can't say how much they captured the time. You know, they captured the Beatles at the height of their popularity. You could tell this was a passion project for Eric Idle.
Yeah.
Because I think, wasn't this his first big thing apart from the Monty Python?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. He'd done, there was the Python films, but this was his thing, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It came through Rutland TV, though, didn't it? Which was the series that Eric Idle was part of. I haven't seen much Rutland TV, but I've got a feeling my mum watched it. And that's where that interviewer character originated as well, apparently, through Rutland TV.
Well, I've seen he was in a couple of Monty Python sketches early on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very standard character, to be fair.
Yes, it is.
An interviewer in a Mac.
And for the long, I didn't, the Mac, that's a raincoat here. I listened to a podcast. It's a podcast done by a couple of Scotsmen about the Columbo television series.
Brilliant.
And they kept saying he's walking around in a Mac. He's doing this in a Mac. And for the longest time, I didn't know what they were. A raincoat. That's what they're talking about. Okay, so
yeah, you do know what a cigar is as well, right?
Oh, I don't.
It's just a cigar.
Oh, it is. Well, I thought the way you said it.
I was just going down a Columbo route. I was just checking.
Oh, I thought it was like, a torch is a flashlight and a pram is a baby cart.
There it's you like, go, yeah. No, a cigar is a cigar.
A cigar is a cigar. Did this make you appreciate Eric Idle more after you saw this? Or were you able to, now that you saw this by himself, were you able, once you watched Monty Python again, you could say, oh, well, that's probably an Eric Idle thing. Could you pick out Eric Idle's sense of humor amongst the other Pythons after watching his solo effort here?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I actually saw Eric Idle live a good few years ago now. Must have been maybe nearly 20 years ago. In Madison, in Wisconsin, he did an American tour. Him doing a load of Monty Python sketches with people who weren't Monty Python. It was weird. It was a weird thing to watch, especially because most of them were not British and they were trying to do British accents. And I think that was the moment I kind of looked at Eric Idle and went, I'm not really that bothered. I think it's why I gravitate more towards Neil Innes in Ruttles, even though Eric Idle's obviously the driving force of it, and he's multi-rolling in there as well.
I didn't. Speaking of multi-role, he plays the interviewer and he plays Stig.
Yeah.
But there's also this standalone scene where he plays this American movie producer.
Oh yeah.
I didn't understand that. That would have been prime for just like to put another actor or another friend. And it's like, you're already doing two roles. You're directing, you wrote it. That just seemed weird to me.
From what I've seen of Eric Idle, he probably just wanted to do it. And he probably just wanted to, or they had someone else lined up who then couldn't do it. And he just went, I'll just do it.
He did an American accent. I guess I don't have the ear because it sounded like an American accent to me. But I've talked to people who are English and they say that's definitely an Englishman doing an American accent. And you once told me you can spot when an American's doing an English accent, you can spot that. But you said the best Americans doing English were Spinal Tap.
Fantastic. Yeah.
You said that they nailed it. It's like they could pass as Englishmen.
I think as the years have gone on, actually, I know I'll have said that to you a long time ago, more and more people are impressing me.
Oh, good. Yeah. I would not be one of them. No.
I tell you what, though, Eric Idle's Liverpool accent is not great.
No, it's not. But I was impressed with Neil and Barry. Mm. I thought they captured John Lennon and Ringo Starr. But you were right. I didn't believe Eric as Paul McCartney. One reason, as you said, for the accent. And two, it's clear that Eric is not left-handed. Because when he's playing that bass, it looks really awkward when he's playing that bass left-handed. It's like he's doing as best as he can, but it's like he is not left-handed.
He's barely even touching it. He doesn't
play. Yeah.
I don't think he plays well. He obviously is a musician as well, Eric Idle.
Yes.
Music, but I think he's a pianist. I don't know how much he plays guitar. I mean, certainly, like you said, definitely not left-handed bass.
He's given it his all. He's given it his all. But the guy who played Ringo, I thought, because Ringo has a very distinct way of playing the drums.
Yeah, he does. He plays the drums, but John Halsey. He plays Barry Wommy. He's a drummer. Yeah, that's what I was going to say earlier. So I haven't seen the Ruttles live, but I have seen Neil Innes live a couple of times. And he usually has John Halsey with him on drums. He's like part of his band. So you would get a few Ruttles songs in the mix because two of them were there. So that was really, really joyous to see, especially because I went to watch them once with my ex-husband, and the reason we met really was because we both liked Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. And for most people, you'd say that band and they'd go, what did you just sneeze? What did you just say? So we went to watch them and we both knew all of the Bonzo songs that he did, but I knew the Ruttles songs. And I was so excited because I didn't think we were going to get Ruttles songs. So that was just joyous.
Now, wasn't the Bonzo band on Don't Adjust Your Set?
They did a few different things like that. But yeah, they were on that. And they were also in, if you want another link to the Beatles, they were in Yellow Submarine. Not Yellow Submarine, sorry. They were in Magical Mystery Tour. They're the band in Magical Mystery Tour where they go to the strip club.
In this movie, they parody all the Hard Day's Night, Help, Magical Mystery, and this the parodies of the movie. Eric Idle must have, or whoever did this, it was like they nailed it.
Yeah,
like the cartoon.
Brilliant.
Yellow Submarine Sandwich.
I think they just got the same people.
They might have.
I think they did for that. They went so far as to get one person to do all the voices on that clip as well.
Okay, I was going to ask you that because in the movie, the Beatles make an appearance at the end, but that's not the Beatles doing the...
No.
So now I'm even more impressed that they went to the fact that they didn't do their own voices.
Well, this is my assumption, but listen to it. And it literally sounds like one person going, I'm going to say this, now I'm going to say this. And now this thing, it's like, it just sounds like the same person doing those lines. And that was the level of, if it's not, then they've missed a trick, but I'm pretty convinced it was just one person doing that.
I would think that the way Eric Idle thinks, that's probably what happened.
Yeah.
If he got so many nuances down, he had to,
Yeah, that's what my brain was at. Yeah, or we're giving way too much credit and everything's been luck.
They got Paul Simon and Mick Jagger. I will admit, he was. I will admit, sometimes I had trouble understanding Mick's accent.
It's just the way he talks. Like, he talks with his, it's like he's swallowing something. It's not just his accent. It's
okay.
A really odd way of talking.
We were living in, you know, squalor. We didn't have any money, and we saw all these. There were the rattles on the TV with girls chasing them. We thought, this can't be that difficult, so we thought we'd have a go ourselves. First time at the Rattles, they came down to see us at Richmond, and we were just completely a number, you know, and they were standing there in their black suits. They'd just come off a TV show, and they were just standing there sort of checking us out, the opposition. And then they introduced themselves, you know, Dirt, Stig, Nasty, Barry. But they were very nice, you know, because they'd heard about us, you know, because we were the South's answer to the Rattles, you know, at that time.
What Ron and I'll do is probably to write some songs, you know, and sell them to people. We tried to write some for the Rolling Stones, and they're probably going to buy them.
The one for that was Dirk, really. He was a real hustler for the songs, I think. You know, always wanted to sell a song, you know, for any old slag he sent a song to, write one, sit up. Okay, and they came down and we were trying to rehearse, and they said, do you want a song? We said, yeah, we're always really open for songs, because we didn't write our own. And of course, the Rattlers were always well known for their hit-making potential ability. Right. And so they ran around the corner to the pub to write this song and came back with it and played it to us. And it was horrible. And so we never bothered to record it.
But he was very funny. And Ron Wood, they actually had more Rolling Stones in this than they did Beatles, because Ron Wood makes an appearance in
That's
this.
That's right.
Interviewed by George Harrison.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were really good friends as well, so.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Were there any famous, like, British character actors?
Are
any of the actors in the movie known for something besides this movie?
Definitely. Let me get the names, because I'm really bad with names. I'm going to actually just pull them up. There's a woman in there. I'm just going to look at all these. Where is she? She played like one of the two main parts, and she's not even in the big list. Dreadful. Well, I'll talk about Barry Cryer first, who had a little cameo in there as well. He's he is an absolute just national treasure. He plays one of the managers towards the end or something, with like a bald head. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what character he plays, but he is a longtime writer of comedy, like 60s, 70s, 80s. Like, he's still going now. He must be nearly 90. But he's hilarious and had a little part in that.
Is he the one that's, do you say he's bald?
Yeah, it's like obviously fake bald, though.
Okay. Is it the one where he's like, well, of course I like the trousers.
I think it was that one, yeah.
Yeah, because I was in the garment industry.
Gwen Taylor was the other
Okay.
one. She did loads of sitcom in the UK. Really, really famous and really, really funny. But I don't think ever really did anything in America, so that's probably the only thing.
I didn't recognize any of the older British actors or actresses in there. And I was just wondering, because I know the Carry On movies are very good, are very big over there. And they never caught over here. On you say Carry On over here in the States, people don't know what you're talking about.
No, I'm not surprised it didn't really catch on. It's, if you're listening and you're like, what's a Carry On movie? There were 30 of them, and they started in the late 50s and they went up to 1980, and then they did like a random one in the 90s that was awful.
The random one in the 90s, does that have Rick Mayall in it?
Yes, I think Rick, it does. It does. But it's dreadful. I would never recommend to watch it. But yeah, it's like bawdy humor, bit cheeky.
Along the line, I guess the closest that Americans may identify it to is Benny Hill.
Yeah. I would say, yeah. I don't know any actual American produced stuff that it would even come close. Like, nothing's ever grabbed me as similar.
No, it's like in the 80s.
Yeah, Animal House and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, in the 80s, we had like Porky's and like sex comedies, but those are all featured. Those were all teenagers. The Carry On movies are all like middle-aged men and women.
That's true. Yeah, it's weird because I know we're not talking about the Carry Ons, but I am a huge Carry On fan, and the first 10 of them are not even like that, but they're just pretty standard British comedies. But as the 70s rolled in, they started getting more naughty and finally just became sex comedies by the end. And that's when it died, really. It lost itself.
Well, in the 70s, we had a lot of sexy stewardesses, and we had like old time comedians from the 50s, and these old men, these old comedians were in these movies with these young women. And it's just hard to watch it. First of all, it's creepy. And second of all, it's like these guys who were comedy royalty in the 50s and 60s are now in these low budget sex comedies. They had to end their career like that.
I watched one last night actually called Spanish Fly, British One, made in 1977, 76. It's like late 70s, like getting too late for this sort of thing. And it was just ridiculous. Like, people who in like the 50s were doing like these suave characters now just trying to get off with 20-year-olds. Yeah, but you know.
Here's one thing I've, it's like being a 50, I'm 51, I'm 52 in a month or two. It's like dating a 20-year-old would just seem like so much work. It was, I don't want to put that much work into it.
I think that's going to end up on your gravestone, isn't it? Really?
Yes. 20-year-olds are a lot of work.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think. We got off on a tangent about just sex comedies, I guess.
That's fine. Is there anything that you didn't like in the movie? This might be stretching it a bit, and maybe I'm reading more into it, but so the character in the movie who played Brian Epstein was clearly, if not not a pedophile, but somebody who liked young boys.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, it was like, am I reading too much in it? Like, you know, could people like say, did that mean that they thought that Brian Epstein was like that? Or like I said, it might be a stretch, might be overanalyzing the character.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I hadn't really looked at it like that. Because they don't try and play off that character as being like Epstein at all.
No.
So I guess if you were to really like write it out, it does seem like they're saying something quite awful. I hadn't made that connection, so hopefully no one else did, and hopefully that wasn't their intention.
Well, now we brought it up, and I don't...
Now it's out there.
I mean, it's been years, and nothing has ever come out in public that he was like that, Brian Epstein.
I don't think that was the case.
That's just nitpicking.
Yeah, it doesn't go with the namesake. I don't think everyone with that surname has to be a paedophile.
Yes. Out of all the Saturday Night Live characters that were there, and this might be another little nitpick, it's like Gilda Radner is in there.
Yes.
And Eric Idle ends up slapping her.
She's wasted in that. I would have preferred to see her play an actual character that was involved somewhere. I think it's really nice she's in it, and that slap bit's kind of funny because it just like it actually it empowers her after it's happened, because then she takes that interview.
Who were the Ruttles?
I don't know.
Come on, you must know.
No, I'm sorry, I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do know.
No, well, I don't know.
Who were the Ruttles?
I don't know.
You do know?
No, I don't know.
You do know, the Ruttles, you know?
I don't know who they are.
Who are the Ruttles? Please tell us.
I'm sorry, I don't know who they are.
Who were the Ruttles?
I don't know.
You do know?
I don't.
You do know? Who are the Ruttles?
I don't know who
the... Who are the Ruttles?
The Runnels were a mop-top English pop quartet of the 60s who set the foot of the world a-tapping with their catchy melodies, their wacky Liverpool humor, and their zany off-the-wall antics, epitomized in such movies as A Hard Day's Rut and Ouch. Dirk and Nasty, the acknowledged leaders of the group, were perfectly complemented by Stig, the quiet one, and Barry, the noisy one, to form a heartwarming, cheeky, lovable, talented non-Jewish group who gladdened the hearts of the world.
Thanks
in 1962, they played The Cavern. After that, they spent several months in Hamburg.
Yes, thank you very much.
In 1962, they released their first single, Twist and Run.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed. Will you shut up?
But I don't know. It just felt like a way to just cram Gildner Radner into it, as opposed to like an important.
Yeah, you're right, because John Belushi, Bill Murray, and Dan Aykroyd are all playing characters.
Yeah,
and it just seems like Gilda is just playing Gilda. She's not.
Yeah.
You know, she's not doing. She wouldn't even have to do one of her famous characters. Just, you know, she was a brilliant comedian. You know, any character that she would have done, because she died young. And after Saturday Night Live, she didn't do a lot of movies. So there's not a lot of stuff out there with Gilda in it. So just to see her was very, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish they'd have used her more. That's all. But then you could probably say that about a lot of female comedians in this.
The model that Eric Idle marries in the movie,
Bianca Jagger,
is Bianca Jagger. Yes.
Yeah.
So, the Yoko Ono character is played by a small Nazi woman in this movie.
Yes. That's Gwen Taylor again, because she plays two parts. She plays the mom of the manager who talks about the tight trousers.
I love that. Just the way. Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed her delivery. With that.
Oh, yeah. It's such a northern, she's playing a northern character there, and it's such a northern delivery of like, oh, yes. Oh, yes. It's like, we don't really want to say it, but we'll say it. It's that sort of thing. And an American, for stuff you might have seen in America like that, Wallace and Gromit's probably the closest example I'd give for that sort of delivery.
Well, he told me that he'd been to see these young men in a dark cellar.
Yes.
He was always very interested in young men.
Oh, yes.
Youth clubs, Boy Scouts, that sort of thing.
Yes, yes.
But these, he said, were different.
In what way?
Well, the hair and the presence, the music.
He liked it?
No, he hated it.
Well, what did he like?
Well, the trousers.
What about their trousers?
Well, they were very, tight.
Tight?
Yes, you could see quite clearly.
Oh, I see.
Everything. Outlines. Clear as day.
Yes, yes, thank you. Yes. So, tight trousers and
nothing
noise.
Left to the imagination.
Yes, thank you.
No, she's great. Honestly, she's done so much. It's a shame no one in America really knows who she is. Loads of sitcom stuff over here. And playing two parts, and you wouldn't even necessarily recognize her because she's...
No.
Yeah, she does such a good job at both those parts, you wouldn't know.
What was Neil Enos's... He was... Ron? What was his...
Dirk. Nasty, isn't it? Dirk Nasty.
Well, he's in the shower with Ron Nasty. So he's in the shower with a Nazi. You know, they're parroting the bed and they're in the shower, but he's like, we're in here for peace. So he's talking about peace sitting next to a woman in a full Nazi uniform.
Yep. Also, it's just occurred to me that we said, we got confused with names. Stig O'Hara is the George Harrison-esque character, and Dirk McQuigley is Eric Idle's character. I think we said Stig earlier.
Maybe.
I mean, it's easy to be honest, you don't even really notice their names because you just know who they're trying to be.
Right. It's John Paul, George, and Ringo.
Yeah, exactly.
That's who you look at it when you're watching this movie. That's how you see it.
You asked me if there were any bits that I didn't like. And I don't know if there are. I think the bit with Gilda Radner annoys me a little bit because it felt crowbarred. But that's probably the only bit that really jumps out. I really like... The ending can seem a bit like a letdown, but when it's put in context of the time, I actually really like it because It was 2 years before John Lennon died. So they were all still alive at this point when this came out. And
yes,
the imagining of what they all went on to do, especially watching, like, I only watched this the other week in 2020, what all the Ruttles, in inverted commas, aka the Beatles, went on to do after the Beatles and the Ruttles or whatever, is really fun to watch. And then obviously with time that's passed, you can kind of parallel, like, oh, well, what actually happened? And yeah, I mean, they didn't predict two of them getting killed. Well, one of them killed and one of them dying, but you know.
One died and George was stabbed in his manor. That's right. He was attacked and stabbed in his manor.
He was. So here's another random story about George Harrison. After that happened, he put up a load of extra security around his house, as you'd expect. And nearby, a British sitcom comedian called, I always forget his name, and I shouldn't, because Rodney Bewes, right. So a sitcom actor called Rodney Bewes lived, the article I read said next door, but obviously George Harrison had a mansion, which was huge. So I don't know how next door you can be. But anyway, once he put up all this extra security, Rodney Bewes' cat tried to climb on his fence, apparently. And hurt itself. And so Rodney Bewes, like, tried to sue George Harrison for hurting his cat and went to the papers with it also. It's just ridiculous. But that's the sort of person Rodney Bewes was.
Do you think he did it for attention?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so he was he not at the top of his game or the top of his fame when this happened? So this was definitely a publicity.
I actually wrote a short play with my partner, Sean, about this guy, and we had to research him, and it's quite sad. Like, he had this massive hit in the 60s and 70s with this sitcom, and then really nothing since. Like, he did some theatre and things like that, but nothing. Whereas the other person that was in it went on to do loads of stuff and got really mega famous. And so I think he just never really recovered from that.
Is this sort of a Wham deal with George Michael? Yeah.
I'd put it like that. Yeah, the other guy, yeah. Rodney Bewes was the other guy.
You never want to be the other guy. The episode I just put out was Casper, which also has Eric Idle in it.
Casper, and like the film?
Yes.
Oh, I've never really seen that. I've seen bits of it.
Yes, Dan Aykroyd is in it as Ray Stantz, a Ghostbuster.
Yes, I knew that. That's the only bit I've seen, I think.
Yeah. And just, well, I don't want to spoil. If somebody listens to this and wants to listen to that, I'm not going to say anything.
Fair enough.
But I did that with one of my friends, and I asked her that. So, do you have a favorite Eric Idle sketch from Monty Python or any of the movies?
I really like Life of Brian. I think that's very clever, as well as being very silly. Yeah, I remember watching Life of Brian for the first time, and I was probably a bit younger than I should have been when I watched it, because there's like full frontal male nudity in that. But you know, I live in Europe, and it just striking me as being, oh, that's quite clever, you know, what they've done, just like subverting this idea. Even as a young child going, oh, I get it. I get what they're doing. And my dad's name's Brian. So I think that there was a link there as well. My favorite Python was Terry Jones. So I don't really have, like, nothing's jumping to mind of like Eric Idle sketches, because he was just kind of there for me. I tell you what, I really like
that's cool.
In tune to One Foot in the Grave, which he wrote, which was a long-running sitcom in the UK, but Eric Idle wrote the theme tune for it and sang it.
Now, what's the name of the show?
One Foot in the Grave.
Hello?
They say I might as well face the truth, but I am just too long in the tooth. I started to deteriorate, and now I've passed my own sell-by date. Oh, I am no spring chicken, it's true. I have to pop my teeth into chew, and my old knees have started to knock. I've just got too many miles on the clock. So I'm a wrinkly, crinkly, set in my ways. It's true that my body has seen better days, but give me half a chance and I can still misbehave. One foot in the grave. One foot in the grave.
And it's about an old curmudgeonly guy who's been forced to retire. That's the premise, really, and he doesn't ever get anything right. But yeah, the theme tune is basically about that. It's very good, very good bit of music. So I think, yeah, Eric Idle for me always jumps out as music as opposed to comedy, I guess.
Well, you're right. He does all the musical stuff in, well, not really. You don't have it in The Life of Brian, but The Meaning of Life. There's a whole bunch of musical stuff.
He wrote the song at the end of The Life of Brian. He wrote Always Look on the Bright Side
of Life. Oh, yes. Yeah. Bright Side of Life.
I went to watch the musical of Holy Grail, you know, the musical version, the stage version. I went to watch a professional tour of it, and I wasn't that impressed. I got free tickets off a student of mine who worked there, and I got free tickets, and I was like, I'll go and give this a watch. And I just don't know. I feel like a lot of Eric Idle, his stuff hasn't aged very well. I think Ruttles has aged pretty well, but I think that's because it's rooted in parody of something that was also of its time. So it's like, well, we know what that is. But I don't know, a lot of Eric Idle. It's like when I watched him on tour in the late 90s doing Nudge Nudge Wink Wink, and I was sitting there going, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right anymore. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
With personal space and not, even though it's a male, not touching a complete stranger without permission. Even though he's just nudging him with his elbow. It's like, you know, all that's Che. It's like, no, what are you doing, weirdo? Why are you touching him?
Yeah. And also just even, I don't know. I mean, you know, comedy from the 60s and 70s is inherently misogynistic. A lot of
and racist.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I would say a lot of British stuff less so racist, but I think that's just because it, although there's definitely instances, don't get me wrong, but I would worry less about that element. But then maybe I'm just not looking in the right places.
Okay, you're a performer, you're an improviser, you're a playwright, you're an actress. A little off topic, how do you feel when you watch yourself?
Oh, interesting. I think because my world, the majority of my work is in teaching and teaching performance specifically, I've just kind of got used to it. Specifically my voice, I teach a lot of radio, so I'm very aware of how I sound. So it doesn't really bother me, but it took me a little while. I think what I do, I enjoy doing it so much. And even when I watch back, if I'm like, oh, that wasn't perfect, but I know I enjoyed doing it. So I'm going to enjoy that feeling again of enjoying it. It's the same with, like, when I play roller derby, we film our roller derby bouts, and we have to watch those back to see what we did well and what we did wrong, you know, and learn from that. I sometimes find that harder than watching a performance. But I think that's because when you watch yourself back in a performance, you're watching yourself. Specifically, like, there's other people there, whatever, but you're watching yourself, really, for the most part.
Yes.
But when
when there's a bunch of people, you're like, I'm going to concentrate on the scene. No, I'm looking right at me. Like, what am I doing? I'm not paying attention to anybody else.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And I think I find that even worse with roller derby. It's like, you've really got to try not to just watch yourself, because it's a team sport. And, you know, you're just one tiny cog. And I think going back, if we're talking about improvisation, like we film all our shows and we watch them back. Well, I mean, we don't watch them back too much, but, you know, they're there if we want to watch them back. And that took practice to not just watch yourself and go, okay, right, I see where I am in this and I see this whole thing. I think that's the hardest part, is to train yourself to watch the whole thing rather than just
yourself.
Yeah.
The first bombshell I ever received by watching myself is I was in a sketch troupe, and people would say, "You're mouthing other people's lines,"
oh,
while they're speaking it. And I'm like, "I'm not doing that. You're crazy." And the play, I'm just mouthing the whole sketch. And so anytime after that, I would clench my mouth. Yeah. So I knew I was mouthing. So in all these other sketches, I got this scowled look on my face because my face is all clenched up. So I'm not mouthing the words.
I did TV acting when I was at university, and my feedback was, I know it, and I can see it now as I'm looking myself on Zoom. I have a natural smile, and when you're doing a dramatic scene and you're trying to concentrate on someone else and all you're doing is like, and you don't even realize you're doing it. So I had to train that out of myself as well. I don't know. It's
well, speaking of improv, Monty Python was famously not improv.
Yes.
They stuck by the script.
Yeah. Very little UK comedy was improvised for a very long time. Even The Office, even the UK Office is not improvised at all. All scripted.
And I think in going to the Ruddles, like you said, Mick Jagger is funny. I enjoyed Paul Simon. And I like the fact that they wrote the parts for them, mm-hmm. and just didn't try to go in and wing it. It's like, we'll just talk about. So sometimes improvisation can be detrimental.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I'm glad that they didn't try to do this in this movie, even though some scenes felt improvised, like when he was in Louisiana and he's talking and this black guy says that the Ruddle stole from him. And his wife is like, he lying. Now, I could see that being an improvised scene.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure there were ad-libs. I think I was under the impression that the Paul Simon and the Mick Jagger stuff was predominantly played with, like improvised with, because all you needed to do was...
Oh, really?
Well, that was my impression. I don't know for sure, but my assumption is that it was. Okay. But only because... all they needed to do was say, I'm going to say the Ruttles, but I mean the Beatles. So you just tell us what actually happened. That was my impression. I don't know for sure, but I...
just say Ruttles instead of Beatles.
Yeah.
And
all they had to do was agree, because there was... this is why I think Mick Jagger's so brilliant, because they just say, oh, what was the question? Something about... oh, and then do you remember the Ruttles? And then he's like, oh yeah, I remember Dirk. Oh yeah, and it's just like, all he does is agree, and the way he agrees is funny. Like, we don't need any more information.
He's probably thinking of the time he met John Lennon.
Yeah,
and just like, oh yeah, and just, you know.
That was my impression. I don't know. I can't obviously say. I have no clue. But my gut feeling is that most of the Paul Simon and Mick Jagger stuff was improvised.
Do you think he only used Michael Palin because he didn't want to put, he didn't want this to seem like a Python project? He didn't want to have the other Pythons in it.
I think
he wanted to have it like a standalone. That's why you only used Michael.
Well, John Cleese was busy. I think he was doing Fawlty Towers at that point, wasn't he? Maybe a bit earlier than that.
Oh, 78. Yeah, that would be the second series. Yeah.
Yeah, so he'd have been busy. Eric Idle and Monty Python and Michael Palin buddied up quite a bit, I think. So it makes sense that Michael Palin would have been like, yeah, I'll just come down. I would expect the George Harrison link to have been there with Michael Palin as well, to be honest. So it might have been a combination of, oh, let's just get Michael in. He's up for anything, isn't he? I don't know where Terry Jones would have fit in. Doing what he does, I don't think he would have really. The only thing I could have seen Terry Jones doing is the John Belushi part. But then you've got John Belushi, so use John Belushi.
You ask me, where's the money? Where's the money? I mean, I don't know where the money is. I've never been good with figures, you know that. I don't know anything about math. It was never my good subject. I don't know where the money is, but if you need money, I'll give you money. But this really surprises me. I'm really shocked, because I thought we had something here a lot stronger than just business. I mean, you know, I love you more than I love my own family. I do. I want to protect you. I want to help you. I want to protect you from the outside world. Protect you from people like me, you know. And I think I'm doing a good job.
I don't know about in England, but in the States at this time, Saturday Night Live was huge. Because I think 78. So this was right around the time of Animal House.
Yeah.
Like you said, if you have Belushi, you use Belushi. Yeah. No, I mean, no offense to Terry Jones. Well, I guess Terry Jones would not have been as recognized as John Belushi in the States at this time.
No, no.
However, I don't know, would have John Belushi been recognized as much as Terry Jones in England at this time?
I don't think so. I mean,
yeah. So it could go either way.
Yeah, it wasn't. And this is for me not even being alive in 1978, by the way. Oh, I was born a year later, so you know. But as far as I'm aware, like Saturday Night Live's not ever really been a big thing over here. I know about it because I lived in America, and that's pretty much when I was introduced to it. I didn't really know what it was before then. I'd heard of it, and I was a big comedy nerd. So if I hadn't really heard of it until I lived in America, then I can't imagine it was big. I mean, it's bigger now because with YouTube, I have a lot of students who watch.
Well, Saturday Night Live, I don't think it would have because it was a lot of political humor.
Yeah.
And it still is. But at the time, like Richard Nixon, when it first came out, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, like I said, it's YouTube and that. But how much would an American know about English politics and vice versa at that time? Because I'll admit it, I'm a Benny Hill fan, and condemn me if you will, but I'm a Benny Hill fan. And in his earlier episodes, he had political humor in there, and I'll admit I didn't understand it. I didn't know who those people were. I don't know, you know, I didn't get the jokes. So I think that would have been the same in England for American politics at the time.
Yeah, probably. I think, again, like I was saying near the start, I think we get a lot more American culture than you get British culture through various means. I mean, I can't really speak for the late 70s, but I would expect. I mean, one of the biggest, I mean, I did used to watch Benny Hill, by the way, but I was about six and didn't know any better.
That's about the age level to watch Benny Hill.
But one of the biggest TV shows in the UK when I was growing up was a show called Spitting Image, which was a puppet show, but it's for adults. So all the characters were puppets, but they were all of political and famous figures. And the main thing I remember from that, and I used to watch it even though I was like 12 and didn't really, actually probably younger than that. Yeah, I was at primary school, so I'd have been about 8 or 9. I didn't really get it. But the main thing I remember is they had this puppet of Margaret Thatcher who wore a suit and tie, because why not? And a puppet of Ronald Reagan. And they would like having, they'd set up this, it's a sketch show, but they'd set up this arc where it was like they were having an affair or something. And it was really bizarre. So what I knew about American politics came through these puppets on British TV. And that was about it.
Basically the only thing I knew about English politics was Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, all I knew was Ronald Reagan. And that he used to be a film star.
Yeah, he used to be a cowboy.
But now, I mean, you know, certainly.
Well, now we're recording everywhere. Yeah, I mean, we're recording this. And in about 3 weeks, I don't know when this is coming out, but while we're recording, in about 3 weeks, we're having an election.
Yeah.
And here in the States. And everybody knows about Trump around the world.
Yep.
So it's totally, everybody knows about Trump.
Oh, we do. We're very aware. It's an interesting thing we're watching from over here. But then you get to watch what's going on over here now.
Yes.
Disaster that we're heading towards.
Well, we've gone on. And that's another tangent we've gone off on. talking about a little documentary called The Ruddles, and now we're talking about international politics.
Well, I mean, it was an international shared film, wasn't it? So
Yeah, it was.
It's fine.
Do you think, like, today's 20-year-olds or something, do you think if they watched this, they would get it? They would know what it's about?
Because I think you need to know enough about the Beatles to really get it. Now, I watched it with Sean, and he isn't a big Beatles fan, and I was sitting there having watched a load of Beatles stuff recently with footage that I was then watching the Ruddles parody, going, oh my God, they've nailed it. They've absolutely nailed it. And obviously he'd not seen any of it. But then you could argue that there's people who like Weird Al who maybe haven't seen the original video of a Weird Al video and like still think it's amazing. You know.
Well, Sean is your partner right now.
Yeah.
And Sean
right
has
now.
Now. At this moment. Sean's always had a problem with me because I said Moonraker was the best James Bond movie.
Of course he would be.
I've said that. He's never really
blocked you on Facebook.
He's never really forgiven me for saying that.
He's a huge James Bond.
He's a James Bond fan, right?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So he gets the 60s stuff. Like, he definitely gets that. But he enjoyed it, and he enjoyed it for what it was. I don't know, because I teach 20-year-olds. I'd be curious to see if they'd get it. I feel like you'd need to know enough about the Beatles to really get it. Because it's...
Well,
in jokes about it.
I mean, fortunately, the Beatles, if you're going to do a mockumentary about something... The Beatles is one to do it because they're true. Just so, even people who don't know music, like you mentioned the Beatles, even if they've never heard a Beatles song,
yeah,
they know who the Beatles are.
Yeah. I think I don't know. I genuinely think I wouldn't recommend it to anyone who said they didn't know or like the Beatles. If anyone said that, I definitely wouldn't recommend it. Cause why would you, what are they going to get out of it? I feel like you at least need to know a little bit about the Beatles to really appreciate it.
Yeah, I agree. Now, did you get any? We're both big Monkees fans as well.
Yeah.
The one scene where I got a Monkees vibe was, you said Lorne Michaels actually produces, and he plays a lowlife salesman. He wanted to put the names of the Ruddles on everything. And that struck me as the Monkees, because when the Monkees came out, they were a quote unquote produced band by television. Mm-hmm. And when they were a hit, they just put their name on everything.
Yeah.
I know now there's a lot of Beatles paraphernalia, Beatles stuff around, but I mean, were they as marketed as big as that? I mean, neither
I
of us were
alive,
around in the
but,
city.
Well, my interpretation of it was that, yeah, that it was marketed. And then, like with everything to do with the Beatles, the Monkees just did it 10 times bigger and wackier. So, you know, what was it? That's like the Monkees' gloves and like with their finger, like their heads on the end.
Monkey hand puppets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I don't think there were Beatles. Peter. Yeah, I don't think there were Beatles ones of those. I don't think there might have been. But yeah, that's my impression, is there was definitely Monkees stuff. I mean, my mum was a Beatles fan in the 60s, and she was from Liverpool as well. And she actually has a signed photograph of the Beatles. But she doesn't own anything else. And I mean, she doesn't really keep things, so maybe that, she's kept that. That's mine in the will. I made sure I get that.
Yeah.
But her mum is a little Beatles, in bit of interesting Beatles info. Yeah, my mum's, I'm probably going to get this story wrong now. I think it's her gran, or her nana, lived down the road from Ringo's mum. Ringo's mum's washing machine broke or something. So she offered to do a washing for her, and then she got a signed photo. that's the story, I think. Anyway, it's a genuine article and it's really nice, and it's going to be mine.
It is. That's very cool. That's a very cool story. Before we go, is there anything that you want to promote?
Oh, God. Well, I guess I could promote, we're doing comedy sports online at the moment still. Manchester is just pretty much any day now probably going to go back into a full-on lockdown because it's got very bad around here. So we're two shows a week at the moment online, and that's at comedy, well, no, it's not. It's at youtube.com/CSZUK. Two shows a week, Wednesday and Saturday, 7 p.m. our time. So wherever you are in America, you'd have to figure that out. And that's what, 1 p.m.? No, 2 p.m. It's 2 p.m. Eastern. So if you want a late lunch and watch some live improv, then, you know, you're welcome.
There you go. I'll put the link in the description of this podcast.
Oh, cheers.
So people just click on it. We haven't seen each other in person in a while.
A long time.
We don't get to talk, but you are, Bron, you're one of my favorite people in the world. So I really thank you for doing this for me. And it was really good seeing you and talking to you again.
Yeah, I had a great time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this is it. This has been another Dan Aykroyd podcast. So please check out this podcast, past podcasts, and check out Bron and CSC Manchester online. And if you're happening to listen, I have 11% listenership in England. That's what my podcast says. I do.
Brilliant. It's not 11%. Even me. I've never even.
It's not. No, Bron, she doesn't listen to this shit. but if you are in England and once all this COVID crap is gone, go see CSC Manchester. I know Bron. I know quite a bit of the people on the team. Not only are they funny, they're some of the best people in the world. And I had a blast when I was over to work with them. Hopefully it'll happen again in the future.
Hope so.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Bye-bye.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd podcast.
I'm standing on the crossing where the Ruttles legend ended. Here it was that the Prefab Four, Dirk, Nasty, Stig, and Barry, the Ruttles, the singing phenomena, who made the 60s what they are today. Here it was that indeed they were just...
Mick, why do you think the Ruttles broke up?
Why do I think they did? Why did the Ruttles break up? Women. Just women. Getting in the way. Cher Shalo fan, you know.
Do you think they'll ever get back together again?
I hope not.